providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, and also writes the Mark to Market blog. I will post a link within the weekend show posting. And Mark, we've talked a lot about commodities in this weekend show. We will also touch on some of the commodity moves, but you are really our in-house currency expert here. So I want to focus on some of these, again, pretty extreme moves in currencies, starting with simply the U.S. dollar. Now, the U.S. dollar, we all know how much it's weighted against the euro, and Europe is broadly continuing to struggle with the ongoing war between Russia and China and some of their energy costs, as well as other implications when, well, they're putting sanctions, everyone's putting sanctions against Russia. Fact of the matter is, though, the U.S. dollar, after starting last year, so 2021, pretty much at a bottom at 89, steadily climbed through most of 2021, dropped a little bit at the tail end of the year, and then has really popped this year and has reached levels right around 99 on the dollar index. Mark, how do you balance out how much of this strength in the dollar is really just a war premium and how much is actual strength in the dollar because traders like what's going on in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that both are right in the sense that there are good things happening in the U.S. relatively, and you also have this war, and that the war is really undermining European currencies, and not only the euro, but until this week, Poland, Czech, Hungary, anything proximate to the war. So I think that the dollar strength is broader, and here's one way to think about it. As you noted, the dollar index is heavily weighted towards the euro, European currencies. Two of the U.S.'s four largest trading partners aren't even in it, Mexico and China. But as a rough and ready proxy for the dollar, it captures like the general trend. But one thing that doesn't really reveal as much, I'd say, is what's happened to dollar yen. Typically, given the risk-off mood, weakness in stocks, the war, you'd expect the yen to be better bid. But today, ahead of the weekend, the dollar has risen to new five-year highs against the yen, above 117. And this, I think, is partly a reflection that the U.S. yield, 10-year yield, is flirting with 2% level. But you've got broad-based dollar strength. And the other point I'd make is that, and this is why I think it's not just the war, but look at what's happening. So I track the two-year interest rate differentials, which I think is, I don't want to get into the bill market, and sometimes it just gives us a broader perspective. And I find it does line up nicely often with the currencies. So say last year, last October, both Australia and Canada offered about a 20 basis point premium to the U.S. And now both are near a 20 basis point discount to the U.S. That is to say, U.S. has higher interest rates than Australia or Canada. And even against Germany, it used to be the Deutsche Mark. Now with the euro, I find it still very sensitive to this two-year interest rate differential, which is basically back to late 2019 levels, above 200 basis points. What this means is that, just to like boil it down in a nutshell, what it means, people are getting paid to be long U.S. dollars.
That's an interesting trade too, right? Being long U.S. dollars into a Fed rate hike. Now, that might have implications as well on dollar strength, as well as the interest rates that you're talking about, where the 10-year has rebounded back up to around 2%. How much of this is predicated on the Fed, and how much is also predicated on the Fed being able to get at least a number of consistent rate hikes out the door in the relatively near term?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You know, so the Federal Reserve does meet next week, and I think everybody and their mother now is looking for 25 basis points. I was never really convinced that the Fed's leadership wanted a 50 basis point hike to begin the cycle, but in any event, it seems quite clear they're not in favor of it anymore. But I think that, I do think the Fed rate hikes, but here's what I'd be careful about. And again, we have this historical patterns to go on. It's not, you can't deduce these things from first principles. But in the past, what's often happened is that the dollar rallies ahead of the first Fed rate hike. Partly maybe it's been telegraphed. The market anticipates it. And we get something that looks like buy the rumor, sell the fact. So that after the Fed hikes rates, it's like delivered what the market has expected. People take profits. And we are getting some extreme readings in some of the currencies as far as the momentum indicators as we head into the weekend.
What extreme readings are you talking about? Share with us what's caught your eye then.
You know, when I was earlier in my career, I would try to find the perfect trend line, mathematically ideal, all these things. But now I want to draw the trend line the way the typical spot trader would, because I want people to act on it. And if I just have this imaginary perfect trend line or this perfect thing that nobody else looks at, doesn't develop that networking effect that we need. So I try to use the technical tools that are common, like the MACD, moving average crossover, convergence, divergence, and you have a slow stochastics. And these, you know, think about how big of moves we've had. These are getting extreme readings. And so it would surprise me to see a bit of a pullback. But also, ahead of the weekend, who knows what's going to happen in Ukraine with Russia. The U.S. and the U.K. are warning that Russia may be engaged in false flag kind of operations, essentially blaming Ukraine for developing biological or chemical weapons, and that would give them, that is Russia, a justification seemingly to use them. And so the U.S. and the U.K. have called Russia out, but ahead of the weekend, it seems to me that many people don't want to take on more risk.
That is true, but we have seen kind of a general shift towards safer assets, right? And also towards commodities. We saw spikes in commodities almost across the board. Some commodities like nickel, boy, oh boy, they have shut down trading, canceled trades in the nickel market. Why aren't we seeing commodity currencies do better then?
Yeah, no, it's kind of interesting, right? Because for the last, most of February into early March, the strongest major currencies were the commodity currencies, Aussie, Kiwi. Canada was strong. And we've seen those currencies weaken, even though we've seen flows into like the stock market. So for example, one of the interesting things about this past week's activity, even though most of the major stock markets have fallen this week, Canada's been up most of the week. And so I think the thing that generally is that one is the currency market is driven by short-term flows. And the way commodities are going to help Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Brazil is probably over time. They get a little bit more money for their exports, but in the long run, what's going to really drive this is going to be money being invested in the commodity space, expanding output, foreigners taking a hold of some companies to secure those supply chains. So I think that the relative strength of the Canadian stock market is notable, but in general, I'd say that the currencies are driven by these short-term flows, while the commodity story is really a medium or longer-term investment theme.
Do you think we are in what a lot of people are saying is another super cycle for commodities then? Has the world changed that much on the back of maybe let's just even say the COVID washout, that very quick drop we saw across the board, demand come back in, and now the Russia-Ukraine war, different supply lines being set up?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. So think about something like oil. Russia exports, say, 5 to 6 million barrels of oil a day. How is that going to be replaced? Russia and Ukraine make up whatever it is, 30% of the world's wheat supply. How is that going to be made up? They make up about half of the world's sunflower oil. How is that going to be made up? So I think that they're right now, given the state of things, the war, I think that it's creating a shortage of these commodities. They're going to be difficult to meet without Russia. And how will this, when I say difficult to meet, how does the market distribute a scarce resource, higher prices? And so I think that's what the bottom line, I think, from the ECB meeting this past week, from what the IMF has said, and I think what the Fed is going to say next week, we should be braced for higher inflation for longer. And that this could mean then, so people like me, I think we're looking for a stabilization, say April, May, in inflation readings. And now looking at what's happening, maybe not until October or Q4.
So inflation is sticking around, hey? And I know a lot of people, a lot of mainstream media was saying that inflation would be coming back down, but this war, quite frankly, puts a whole other catalyst behind higher inflation or that narrative. How does that trickle into the markets then? How does that trickle into Fed policy?
Yeah, so of course, you know, we saw this from the ECB this week as well, where they tempered the amount of bonds they're going to be buying going forward. And I think we'll see the same kind of thing from the U.S., where the Fed wants to react to the higher inflation and recognizes that we've got a very strong labor market. Powell seems to think that he and the Federal Reserve can engineer a soft landing. That is, slow down inflation without driving the economy into recession. I'd say that, generally speaking, you look at the 2 to 10 year yield curves, and those have really flattened. And that's warning us, I think, among other signs, that maybe a recession later this year, early next year, which really plays on that stagflation scenario, which I'm still not fully there yet. But that's the one that we have to deal with.
What's it going to take to get you more on that stagflation bandwagon? We are hearing more and more about it. And I realize we need at least another quarter, if not a couple quarters, of more stagflationary type data. But what's it going to take to convince you or turn you into more of a stagflation believer then, Mark?
Well, here's my problem that has to, for me, that has to be like overcome, is that I need to see like what quarters are going to be negative. What's going to drive us into the recession? And so here's the kind of growth that on a quarterly basis, that's the, say, for the sake of an argument, say that Bloomberg, median forecast in the Bloomberg survey, just to give you what these numbers look like. So I think everybody recognizes Q1 is going to be weak. The Atlanta Fed's at zero, and the market said it could grow about 1% or so year quarterly, you know, the quarterly GDP number annualized. But then it says a bounce back in Q2, back above 3%, still at 3% in Q3. 3% growth for the U.S., that's not really stagnation. That's above trend. And so we don't get down to trend till the very end of this year. And by that time, I think that we'll have other things to be easing. The supply chains would have eased. I can't imagine this war between Russia and Ukraine lasting that long either. And there's other things that will be working to boost commodity output. Maybe it's Venezuelan oil. Maybe it's the Iranian oil. Maybe it's strategic reserves. You know, we've barely tapped them even. So I'm not there yet, partly because I still think that inflation, this kind of inflation, is not the stuff that keeps it. What we want to watch is like the underlying things. Like I know that central banks watch wages, but the commodities just is really, really taxes use. It really slows things down more than fueling like sustained, say, demand-driven inflation. And I'd like to see what happens with growth. I mean, it's still possible that new stimulus measures, for example, in the EU, they're talking about another possibility of a joint bond issuance to help fund energy and defense. In Japan, which because of COVID and these states of emergency that they've introduced that go until later this month, the Japanese economy could contract here in Q1. And they're talking about a new fiscal stimulus package ahead of the summer elections.
So is that what we need to depend on for the demand side of that whole equation being some more stimulus? Because quite frankly, it does seem like the consumer is getting squeezed. And even if we see a bit of a pullback in energy prices, they are still generally higher. Food prices are generally higher. It does seem like the consumer is slowly reaching their limit.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem, especially in democracies. You know, when we have elections coming up, UK has an election in May, local elections in May. We have one in November. I think there's a lot of political pressure to help avoid squeezing the middle class. But I think that the difference between this and COVID, I think as far as like thinking about spending goes, is that under COVID, it was a generally shared problem. And it was, you know, it was a huge payout to replace lost income plus. However, this, I'd say, is more of a military Keynesianism, where the new spending will be justified for national security grounds. So that suggests a bit of a narrower base for it.
So, Mark, let's also talk about the gold then, because, look, gold was screaming higher. And as much as that could be on the back of higher inflation, we've had higher inflation for a little while now, and negative real interest rates. Gold really did get breaking out of some key levels on the back of this war. And look, the volatility continues. Just this week, in about one day of trading, or about 24 hours of trading, gold had over a $100 swing. At one point this week, it was up by 2080 level. And at another point, it was down 1960-ish. Some big swings here, but overall gold is still hanging out, let's say, closer to 2000 than it really ever has for a prolonged period of time. What's your takeaway from the moves in gold, and how sustainable do you think prices are, let's say, above 1900?
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth. I'm a bit worried about gold from a technical perspective. I'm also thinking that that here we are, the war, to the extent that the war is driving gold higher, here's where I think we are. The Russians are about to surround the capital. And if there's not going to be a slaughter, it's going to be because the Ukraine government capitulates. And they can capitulate by doing a couple of things, like that Russia's demands. Change the constitution to prevent NATO. After all, it's quite clear now to the Ukrainians that NATO is not welcoming them. And to recognize sort of the facts on the ground. And the facts on the ground, like we say in Chicago, possession is 9/10 of the law. Russia possesses Crimea. The separatists have possessed their regions, or part of their regions. And I think that to avoid a slaughter, that this war cannot go on much longer without really intensifying this human tragedy that's unfolding. Already something like 2.5 million people have fled. So that for me, the risk that there is a ceasefire, a truce, or some kind of end of this war soon makes gold a bit vulnerable. But technically, I think it's even more disturbing. So I'm looking again at these same technical indicators. Look at these slow stochastics. The slow stochastics are rolling over, and they did not confirm this week's high. Like you say, it was near 2070. The slow stochastics didn't make a new high, and they're rolling over. So that's, to me, like a bit of a potential bearish divergence, right? Because we go with the indicator over the prices. The MACD are flatlining at overbought levels. So I kind of think that we might have seen the high. We might have to go back up and test. Maybe it's on a bad headline or something, like the 2030, maybe even 2050. But I think that the next big move is going to be lower. And this is partly what we saw with crypto, too. Part of it might be not just the Russians buying gold or other people around there buying gold to preserve their money, but it could be people anticipating Russians to buy it. And that's what we saw in crypto. Remember, early on, we saw a big run-up in crypto, and people said, well, this is the Russians buying. And then it turned out that later, as people did the reports and really studied those flows, it wasn't so much Russian buying, but other people buying, perhaps in anticipation. So I think that might be the story with gold. And remember what's happening, too, that the U.S. 10-year yield near 2%. Higher interest rates increases the opportunity cost of owning gold.
Now, what about the argument that even with higher rates, we still have negative real rates? Inflation is still running high, and your outlook even said that inflation will continue to be high for a while.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I just, my sense is that most of us don't really think about real interest rates, right? We collect a coupon, it's nominal interest rate. I think about the yield of stocks. When people look at the yield of stocks, they talk about the nominal yield, the return on their capital, not really in real terms. But I hear you. I mean, that's why I think maybe gold is holding up so well. My guess, though, would be that we see below 1900 before we get to 2100.
Do you see the outlook for 2100 this year, then? Is there enough catalyst on the other side, even if gold does have to pull back a little bit in the near term?
Well, you know, this week, part of the news this week has been that the U.S. and the U.K. are warning that Russia may use chemical and biological weapons. If they do, I think it would represent a new escalation. So that'd be one thing that could get gold really to rally. And the other thing is if the war widens, imagine that Poland's idea of transferring planes to a U.S. base in Germany and then transferring those planes to Ukraine makes Russia begin bombing a NATO member. This war could still get out of control in the sense that it could still be a NATO versus Russia confrontation. I think that would be very bullish for gold. I don't think that's the base view or like the central scenario, but it's surely possible still.
Yeah, nobody wants more war, I don't think. But hey, we'll see how everything moves next week, especially on the back of the Fed rate hikes and the press conference where we always see some volatility, especially when Powell is getting grilled on future projections where rates are going and what the Fed's going to be looking at. Mark, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. Great having you on the weekend show. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. And everybody, thank you for tuning in on this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. You can always contact Chad and myself through email. That is fleck@kereport.com and chad@kereport.com. Everybody, Mark, you too. I hope you all have a great weekend.
Thank you. Good luck, everybody.